is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Scott Nagy, head men's basketball coach at Wright State University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And the NBA season
upon us.
We're back. Game one already in the books, game two at halftime, and we are going to jump right into our season predictions. I know we did last week and the week before we did our conference previews, but we thought we'd dive a little bit deeper into some of the playoff scenarios and also into some potential awards that are going to be given out, and we'll make our predictions for MVP and Coach of the Year, Rookie of the Year, All NBA first and second teams. We'll talk that through and see what we come up with.
But we have some news to talk about first, Mike.
We do.
Ben Simmons thrown out of practice today because he refused to go into drills. I don't know if you read everything.
I read some of it. I read Embiid's quote. I read Doc Rivers' quote where he said somebody asked him if he wanted Simmons to still be a part of the team, and he said something like, "Not today. But in the future, we still would like to have him around."
And then he got suspended for a game. He got fined for the four preseason games and for practices. He has basically not been paid since he returned to the team on October 11th.
What's he doing?
He's pouting. He's being a bonehead. Listen, I don't know if these are accurate, but like an hour later after like the stuff came out, someone tweeted a picture of Ben Simmons at a strip club, Mike.
I doubt that's accurate.
It was a Philadelphia beat reporter that tweeted it. So I don't know. Listen, if that's the case, like he should be.
I don't know what he's doing. I mean, I don't understand at this point what the strategy is, because if you're a team that's considering trading for Ben Simmons, the part of Ben Simmons that you're worried about is not his physical talent. You're worried about his mental capacity and his ability to overcome the yips or whatever he has going with the free throws, which has then affected the way he plays in other parts of his game. And now you have a guy who is refuses to go in drills, refuses to practice, obviously is not, I mean, to me, you're just not building up your value. You're not making it easier for the Sixers to trade you. When teams already have this question about, well, what kind of mental capacity does this guy have? And now he's doing the things that he did today and that he's apparently done in the whole time since he's reported to Philadelphia. It just doesn't make sense if you're Simmons and you're clutch and you're trying to get this guy out of town. I guess you can make the situation so untenable that You think Philly's just going to trade you for 50 cents on the dollar, which I guess if you're Simmons, that's probably the best case scenario, right?
Yeah.
Right? Because if a team has to give up a ton to get Simmons, then Simmons is in a bad situation. If the team has to trade nothing for him, then there's more left for guys to play with Simmons. So I guess maybe that's the strategy, but I just don't know what franchise at this point wants to have Ben Simmons as a guy that you're going to build around as your max player based on what you've seen over the last 6 months. I just don't know who that team is.
I don't get it either. So Shams tweeted, Doc Rivers asked Ben Simmons to join a defensive drill today. Simmons refused. River asked again. Simmons said no again. Rivers then told Simmons he should go home, and Simmons dropped the ball and walked away. Like, this is like what Jake does when he doesn't get what he wants. Jake's my 4.5-year-old. He whines, says no, and then when I said, then he just walks away. Like, that's what it sounds like to me. He's throwing a little temper tantrum. And listen, Shams then tweeted, sources tell me that Simmons is not against playing, but he is not mentally ready yet.
What does that even mean? I mean, he's a professional athlete. This is all he does.
He showed up to camp.
How are you not ready? What have you been doing since last season ended? It's not like he's working a 9-to-5 job and he has to prepare himself at midnight after his kids go to bed. He should be ready. I get it. Maybe you're not in a headspace where you're excited to play for the Philadelphia 76ers. I get that. But you got to show up. You got to be a professional. If you want to get out of there and teams already have questions about who you are and what you are and what you're all about, and now you're going to do this, and some team's going to say, yeah, we want to trade for the next 4 years to Ben Simmons at 100 and whatever, $78 million or whatever he has on his contract. It's insane. I don't understand what he's trying to accomplish by doing it the way that he's done it. First of all, to take the hard line and say, I'm not coming in, I'll never put on a Sixers uniform again. And maybe he's not going to, but he's put on a Sixers practice jersey at least. But so then to cave in on that, then you come back and now you just act like a fool while you're there. It doesn't make any sense. If this is what he was going to do, just stay home. Right? I mean, just eat the money.
Yeah, eat it.
Eat the money, and maybe eventually Philadelphia trades you, or maybe eventually there's some type of resolution. Maybe eventually you're mentally ready to show up. I mean, clearly Embiid doesn't want any part of Ben Simmons at this point. So I don't think that you could maybe have made a case that, okay, he comes back in and he's a good soldier and he does what he's supposed to do. Maybe you can make things work. It might not be ideal, but maybe you can make things work. At this point, the ship has sailed on him being a part of this year's Philadelphia 76ers team.
Yeah. So you don't think there's any chance he plays in any games, right?
I don't think there's a chance of him playing in a game and having it go well, right? I mean, if he's doing that today and he's refusing to go into a drill and Doc Rivers is telling him that he needs to and then he just walks off, I guess you could put him in a game. I guess maybe things could turn around. But if you're one of his teammates and you've watched this entire saga and you've seen how he's behaved at practice and now you're going to go into a game, you're going to depend on this guy. I think Embiid's rant after practice,
we're not going to babysit you.
We're not going to babysit you. It's clear what his position is. And I think the rest of the team takes their cue from their leader, in this case, Embiid. And I just don't see where he's going to be able to go out on the floor with them and make any kind of positive impact. I think both sides are kidding themselves if they think that's going to happen, whether that's Sixers management, Daryl Morey, Doc, whoever. I just don't think once you see your teammate behaving that way, I just don't think that you want to go out and be in the foxhole with a guy like that.
Yep, I agree. Listen, there's a chance that he's going to play, but
it's going to be a farce. If he plays, it's going to be a farce. It's going to be a complete farce. And I just don't know who trades for this guy. Who trades for him? Who wants him? Who's desperate enough to be able to say to themselves, hey, we can bring this guy in and we can get him turned around and we think we can build a team around him as our leader. The type of behavior that we've seen over the last 3 or 4 months from Simmons does not indicate in any way, shape, or form that he's a guy that I would want leading my franchise or being the face of my franchise. And I'm certainly not giving up very much to get him. So Philly's in a tough spot, man. They're in a very tough spot where you're looking at losing a guy who's been an all-NBA player in his career, and he may just sit this year, or I think you are probably going to have to trade him for pennies on the dollar, because who's offering him something real? Who's offering Philly? I mean, they're not getting another all-NBA type player back for Ben Simmons.
Yep. And we've hashed this out. We've talked about this. It's not just happening.
It's totally immature. It's just totally immature. It speaks to what his mentality is at this point. Could he turn it around? Maybe. But I combine this behavior with the fact that he struggled mentally in the playoffs last year and that he doesn't shoot jump shots, and all that stuff is in his mind. That's not his physical capability or his physical tools. I would be very, very, very hesitant to A, give up anything of value to get him, and then B, I certainly wouldn't be excited to pay him $168 million or $178 million or whatever his last 4 years of his deal are worth. If I was another franchise, I would not do that if I was them.
Yep, I would too. I agree with you. I wouldn't trade for him right now. I mean, like, listen, Harden did his thing, and like at least he showed up and was like,
but everybody knew what Harden was trying to do.
That's true, but no one knows what Simmons is trying to do, right?
That's what I mean. I don't know what his motivation is. Clearly, Harden's motivation was, I'm going to stink it up until I get traded. Simmons hasn't done that. I don't know what he's trying to accomplish. Plus, James Harden is a far more accomplished player at the point in his career he was last season compared to where Ben Simmons is. Especially, look, we've made fun of James Harden's playoff shortcomings, but we've never seen anything on the level of what Ben Simmons has done in the playoffs coming from James Harden. As much as I like to make fun of James Harden, he was nowhere near the level of inability that Simmons showed during last season's playoffs. I mean, that was ridiculous.
Yep, I agree. All right, so that's the first news for the day. We'll see where it goes. Second news of the day, game started, and Milwaukee got their rings and absolutely lambasted the Nets. You know, I don't think we want to spend too long talking about this one game in the season. But I mean, I think it speaks a lot to the fact that, like, Brooklyn has some stuff to figure out, especially if Kyrie isn't going to play at all this year, which all signs seem to be pointing that way. You know, Patty Mills is not Kyrie. He's a pretty good player, and he's actually, you know, before the podcast we were talking, he's kind of the reason they were sticking around. Him and Durant were basically the only two doing anything. I think Harden had a stretch of a few minutes that he looked okay, but he didn't play super well tonight.
Without Patty Mills tonight, that game, I mean, it was a blowout as it was, but yeah. Patty Mills kept them in it by hitting his first 7 threes. Without him, that game was probably over at halftime early in the third quarter. And Brooklyn kind of hung around, and Milwaukee eventually blew him out. But Patty Mills is going to be a good addition for Brooklyn. I think Brooklyn does have a lot to figure out in terms of what their rotations are going to be. I know that they spent a lot of time on the broadcast talking about how surprised they were that Nick Claxton was the fifth starter. Clearly, they had a spot left for Kyrie. We've talked about it completely for the last couple of weeks, but I don't see Kyrie suiting up for Brooklyn this year unless New York changes the rules and their law, the mandate that you have to be vaccinated to be able to play in the facility. If that rule goes away, then Kyrie plays. But if his availability to play hinges on whether or not he gets the vaccine, I don't think that's going to happen. So I think if you're Brooklyn, you have to go into this with the idea that we're trying to figure out what we look like without Kyrie. And clearly with Durant and Harden, you have plenty of firepower with those guys. But I don't know. I look at the guys that they played tonight in terms of the minutes, and Blake Griffin, I like Blake, but I'm not sure that Blake Griffin's going to be playing. Tonight he only played 23 minutes, but it was a blowout. But if Blake Griffin's a starter for this team, I don't know. Then you're bringing in LaMarcus Aldridge. You're bringing in Millsap, James Johnson. I don't know. I'm not sold that their bench is as good as people think they are. And as you said, we don't want to overreact to one game, but I thought Milwaukee looked pretty darn good and pretty together. And I thought Brooklyn still looked kind of discombobulated trying to figure it out. So granted, they had Kyrie for part of training camp when they were out there in San Diego. And so I'm sure that they felt that at some point they were going to get him back, but I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't think he's coming back.
I don't like to look at the first game of the season and say like this is what's going to happen, because obviously lots of things can change. You know, there's, you know, like I look back to the year LeBron came back, 2015. What happened in the first game, Mike?
They got killed by the Knicks.
Carmelo's Knicks. Okay, they lost.
By the way, that was another one of my arguments against LeBron as the all-time greatest player. I don't know if you do. Well, we weren't podcasting at that point, but I remember I've said this before that there's no way Michael loses that game
because it's
you
the
could
first
tell game. Me you it's his first game back. There's no way Michael loses that game because
he never left.
That's true, but there's no well his game that he came back. I guess after when he's. You know, whatever. Anyway, there's no way LeBron should have lost that game, and there's no way that Michael would have lost it, but that's neither here nor there. Anyway, I guess my greater point here with this is, yeah, you shouldn't overreact. There's no question about that. I do think that the advantage that Milwaukee has over Brooklyn is they kind of have known what they have and who they have coming back, and their three main guys are were together all the way through the playoffs and all the way through the championship, and they're ready to go tonight. Although Jrue Holiday went out with a heel contusion at some point I don't think he played at all in the second half. So, and he was playing well before he went out, but Milwaukee knows who they are. I think we've heard a lot of talk about Giannis sort of making the leap and what that championship run is going to do for him. And I think you saw a little bit of it tonight. Again, you can't take completely everything from this first game, but what I take away is that Milwaukee is going to be a team that is going to be right there at the end. And whether or not they can repeat, who knows? But barring injury, they're going to be right there fighting for an opportunity to play in the finals, win the championship, however you want to look at it. They're going to be solid all year as long as they stay healthy.
Yep. All right. Like I said, I don't think we need to spend much more time litigating that because it's one game and it's an 82-game season, and we'll just have to see what happens. And this by the way, the Lakers-Warriors game is pretty good right now. LeBron and AD has looked good. The rest of the Lakers, not so much, which basically sums up what the Lakers need to do. And the Warriors, you know, they've done a good job keeping stuff down, the Lakers have, but Wiggins has actually had a pretty decent game so far. He's had some flashes, although he had a 4-on-2 fast break and he tried to dunk it and he missed the dunk, so that was really good. Anyways, so we'll see what happens when we're done talking about where we're at in the game. Right now there's 10 minutes left. The Lakers are up 5, so so what we're going to do is we're going to go through our awards and where we have things. So I guess the first thing we're going to start with is the coach of the year, right, Mike? Was that what we're going to go?
Coach of the year.
All right.
Sure.
Go ahead. Give me your coach of the year.
For me, it came down to two guys. I think it comes down to Spoelstra or Rick Carlisle.
Oh, my God.
Those are the same two you had. I mean, I think it's pretty consensus, right?
Yeah.
I don't think there's really any surprises here. The reason why I think those two guys are the ones you're thinking about is because A, Spoelstra, you bring in Kyle Lowry. Miami kind of had a little bit of a downslide last year after making the finals in the bubble. So if they hop back up into the top four in the East, I think Spoelstra has a tremendous amount of respect around the league as it is. And if he can lift Miami into that third spot, maybe even the fourth spot in the East, then I think that he's going to be given a ton of consideration. And then Rick Carlisle, you're going from the goofy situation that the Pacers had last year under Nate Bjorkgren, and Carlisle brings them some stability, a guy who is a proven winner, a guy who, again, just like Spoelstra, has a great reputation around the league. I would expect that Indiana is going to have a better record under Rick Carlisle and look a lot better and be a lot more stable than they were under the previous regime. So I think those are the two guys that you can see their teams moving up in the standings and also just looking better coached. So I think those are the two most likely candidates. I don't even know who else you might consider. Maybe Billy Donovan, if the Bulls jump up.
Well, that might be a GM of the year. I don't know about coach of the year. I mean,
well, but if the Bulls somehow creep up into the top five or six teams in the East, I think Billy Donovan will get a lot of consideration for putting those pieces together, despite the fact that, yes, the upgrade in personnel might make a big difference, but ultimately coach is probably going to get the credit for that.
Yep. All right.
I don't know if there's any other real candidates that leap out at
me. J.B. Bickerstaff when the Cavs get the 3 seed.
If the Cavs get the 3 seed, J.B. Bickerstaff will definitely get some coach of the year consideration.
All right. I'm not saying they're getting the 3 seed. All right. Let's just be clear here. All right. So rookie of the year, I'm going to start, Mike, and I'm going to go with the rose-tinted glasses here, Mike.
All right.
I'm taking Mobley. I'm going to say Evan Mobley is going to be the rookie of the year.
Give me the case for Mobley. How does he win it? What's the path to him winning rookie of the year? Tell me what it is.
Two major steps. Two major things. Plays in every game is relatively productive in all the games. Defensively, clearly the best defending rookie. And I know that doesn't necessarily win rookie of the year, but the key to me, Mike, is the Cavs getting the play-in games. I think those three things happen and Mobley's a part of it and he's been played well. He's clearly the best defender of the rookies and, he's been productive and the Cavs getting the play-in game. I think that gives you a chance. It gives him a chance to win it. You know, obviously, like Detroit Pistons aren't. I don't even think they're going to sniff the play-in game. Maybe I'm wrong, but like, Cade Cunningham. So here's the question, Mike: if Cade Cunningham puts up, you know, 25 points a game, like statistically has better numbers than Mobley, but Mobley's got, you know, solid, pretty good numbers as a key cog in the, like, Cavs making the play-in game, like, does that give him any cachet or is it strictly a stats thing?
I think winning is going to impact the race for sure. If the Cavs were to make it into the play-in game and perform better than what people think, and Mobley is having a good season, I'll ask you what that means in just a second. But if Mobley has good stats and the Cavs elevate in the standings and get up into the 9 or 10 or 8 seed, then sure, there's a possibility that Mobley could win the Rookie of the Year. I think Cade Cunningham and Jalen Green are probably much more likely to put up big stat lines, but I think both of those teams, the Pistons and the Rockets, are going to be among... I think the Cavs are going to be better than those two teams. Even if the Cavs don't jump up into the play-in, I still think the Cavs are going to have a better record than those two teams by a solid 5, 6, 7 games easily. Does that make a difference if the Cavs are 11th in the East and the Pistons are 14th? I think it probably has to be a bigger disparity than that, because I do think there's probably going to be a disparity in statistics. So I guess my question for you would be, let's say the Cavs get to the 10 spot and they make it into the play-in, what does Mobley's stats have to look like in order for him to get real consideration for the rookie of the year? How many points does he have to average? How many rebounds does he have to average? How many blocks does he have to average
in order for... I think if he puts up... If he puts up like 15... Eight or 15 to 18... 8 to 10 rebounds and like 2 block shots. Does that sound realistic? Like, I'm not saying like that's what he's going to put up, but to win...
Does that sound realistic for him to win?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's realistic for him to win. If the Cavs have a successful season, and define that however you want, and Mobley goes for 15, 8, and 2, and he's also really a force on the defensive end of the floor, then I think he'll get serious consideration because, again, Cade Cunningham and Jalen Green are going to play for teams that are going to finish at or near the bottom of the conference. I can't imagine either of those teams finishing any better than second last in their respective conferences. So Jalen Green's probably going to put up 20 plus, I would guess, because he's going to be one of the main guys for Houston. You're looking at Kevin Porter Jr., you're looking at Jalen Green, and you're looking at Christian Wood. Those three guys are going to put up a lot of shots and score a lot of points for the Houston Rockets. So I would anticipate Jalen Green is probably going to score quite a bit. And I would also guess he's probably going to be pretty inefficient. And he's probably not going to do a ton besides score. On the other hand, Cade Cunningham is probably not going to score as much as Jalen Green. But he's probably going to have better all-around statistics. He'll probably be more efficient. He's going to be more of a playmaker. He's going to probably do more things that are going to impact winning. Not that Detroit's going to do much winning, but things that contribute to winning basketball. I think Cade Cunningham is going to be more of that type of player. His statistics, his raw stats may not be as gaudy, especially when you're talking about scoring. But I do think if Mobley gets to 15 and 8 and the Cavs have a decent season, then he'll be in the mix because – especially analytics-wise, I think Jalen Green probably is going to take a hit analytically. Whereas I think when you look at Mobley and what he's going to maybe bring on the defensive end of the floor, if he can have an offensive season where he averages 15 and 8, then I think he's got a real shot at it. I don't think he's going to be able to do that, to be honest with you. The Cavs have Markkanen, Jared Allen, Kevin Love. There's a lot of guys that are vying for minutes. Now look, if you're the Cavs, Evan Mobley should be prioritized over any and all of those guys. I know you just paid Jared Allen $100 million, but Jared Allen is never going to become the player that Evan Mobley potentially could become. So I don't want to slow Mobley's growth just so I can make sure that those other guys get minutes and are happy. I want Mobley out there playing. But 15 and 8 seems like a pretty big ask for a 19-year-old big man who's also going to be, I don't want to say the anchor of your defense, but he's going to be a key part of your defense when he's out there on the floor. If he does that, Cavs fans, we'll have to be ecstatic, and I would definitely be stumping for him to win Rookie of the Year. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm going to pick Jalen Green simply because I think he's going to put up big numbers. I don't think they're going to be very efficient, but I think he's going to show enough flashes. He's going to have some exciting plays. He's going to be the guy that has a lot of highlights. And I think that's going to carry the day. Because I think Cade Cunningham, my guess is he probably has a stat line that looks maybe even similar to what we just described with Mobley, where I think Cade Cunningham puts up like a 15, 5 and 5, something like that, 16, 5 and 5. And I think Jalen Green's probably going to put up like a 23.
Yep.
23, 3, and 3, somewhere in there. So I'm going with Jalen Green just because I think he's going to get more opportunities to do stuff than these other guys.
Are you tired of slipping and sliding on the court and sticky sheets just aren't giving you grip? Grip Spritz solves this problem without having to lick your hand to clean your shoes. Grip Spritz is used by countless AAU, high school and college programs, semi-pro teams, as well as NCAA athletes and G League players. Unlike other products, Grip Spritz has solutions for individual players, not just entire teams. We've used Grip Spritz at our Head Start basketball camps, and players love it. To keep you and your team from slipping and sliding, visit gripspritz.net to learn more.
All right, we're going to move to the NBA, all NBA teams, Mike.
All right.
We want to start with the first team, or do we want to start with
let's start with the first team, because I think the first team is easier. Maybe I'm wrong. I got to believe that you and I have the same five guys, although maybe not. We'll see.
All right.
Who are the ultimate? Who are the guys that there's that barring injury, there's no doubt that they're going to be on the first team?
Giannis, Durant, LeBron. Uh-oh. I hear silence, all right. Mike.
I only have two of those guys.
Oh, you don't have LeBron. Come on.
I don't have LeBron on the first team.
Come on.
Well, I went with the center designation, because we're still not in the front. We're still not in the front court, right? You still have to have – they haven't changed that. You still have to have a center.
Well, all I know is, like, when I was doing –
right, you still have to have a center,
though. I
don't know.
What do they classify Luka as?
Luka was a guard last year.
Well, someone has him. I was looking at predictions because I was trying to figure out like what people had Luka in at the forward position.
Yeah, he could be in as a forward. I think he could play. I think he could. I think he qualifies in either spot.
So
I think
there were LeBron guys. Qualify remember, in any position?
LeBron was qualified, I think, as a guard or a forward. Maybe, I don't know.
I think this is.
I know there was. All right, I'll give it to you. You can put LeBron on
cheat.
There if you want.
Okay. All right.
You
good.
Can put LeBron. You can put LeBron on there if you want.
All right.
All right. So let's go. So first team four. Let's just say four. You're going to put LeBron at guard then.
Yeah.
Okay. So the two forwards are a no brainer. Durant and Giannis have to be your two first team All NBA forwards. I don't think there's any question about that. Then your guards, you're going with LeBron.
LeBron.
I did not go with LeBron. I kept LeBron as a forward.
So I'm going to guess that means that you have Luka and you have Steph Curry as your guards.
That's correct.
Okay. So, I put Luka and LeBron as my guards. And I have.
So you bumped Steph off, kept Luka on.
Yeah. And I put Jokic as my center.
All right. So we basically agree. So I have Jokic as my center as well. So my first team is Steph, Luka at the guards, then Durant and Giannis as my forwards, and Nikola Jokic as my first team All-NBA center heading into the season.
Okay. So then for second team, my guards, I have Steph and I have Dame.
All right. I have Harden and Dame.
Okay.
I felt like... I mean, you start splitting hairs, obviously, because you think about which guys are likely to be healthy, what their teams are going to look like, how their role is going to be on each of the teams. And I think Harden is – you saw it a little bit tonight in that he's definitely taken on a different role in Brooklyn than the role that he had in Houston. You don't see him holding the ball. You don't see him dribbling the ball. You don't see him pounding the ball.
He only had like six shots at one point in like the third quarter. Like he'd only taken
like 6 for 16. It still feels like when he goes to the basket, when he wants to get to the basket, he can get by anybody at any time. He still obviously has the step back three. As a regular season player, it's hard to argue against him. I will say that if I had bumped LeBron to the guard position and had to make a choice between LeBron or Harden, I think I would lean towards LeBron. Although the honest reason why I put LeBron on my second team is more due to my belief that I don't know how many games. I know he said I'm going to play every game and I don't believe in resting and whatever, but I think there's either going to be an injury or some rest or something similar to what's happened the last couple of years where he's not going to play 75 games. He's going to miss a stretch of the season with some type of injury, or they're going to sit him out or whatever. So that was my main reason.
Okay, that's fair.
For putting him on,
that's fair.
Putting him on the second team.
All right. So who are your forwards on the second team, Mike?
So then my second team forwards, LeBron is obviously one. And then my other one that was the hardest, I think this was probably the hardest slot to figure out who my next forward was. I would raise the same argument for Anthony Davis, who I did not put on my second team, I would raise the same argument that I just raised with LeBron, that his history of playing a full season and not going through and getting dinged, I don't know. I don't see him as being a guy who's going to play 78 games this season. And so as a result of that, I did not put AD on my second team. I ended up going with Jimmy Butler.
And my second team, my second team is Jimmy Butler and AD as well.
Okay.
So like, and that was me when I cheated and putting LeBron as a guard.
All right. That's fair. So who's your third team, or sorry, your second team center?
Embiid.
Right. Okay. So we basically have the same 11 guys, which I think if you look at the consensus of who the 11 best players are in the league, I think the 11 names that we came up with are the 11 guys that most experts would probably put at the top of the league. I don't think there's anybody else that you could look at that would crack this 11, at least based on their reputation coming into this season. Now, is there a player or two or three in the group below this that could crack this lineup? Absolutely, depending on injury and depending on how players in that next tier play. Maybe they do outperform. Maybe there's injuries. Maybe there's age. Who knows? But I think these are the best 11 players heading into the season. So basically, I had James Harden in there, and you had AD in there.
Yeah.
So you had Harden out. I had AD out. But I think we're splitting hairs. So the question I asked you before the podcast was, if you had to pick one guy who was not on your teams, who was maybe, if you wanted to take a 25-1 flyer of a guy, you say this guy could crack an all NBA team. And I'm also considering the third team, maybe not getting all the way up here to the first or second team. But we got to remember, last year, Julius Randle ended up being second team all NBA. And certainly nobody expected that heading into next season. Heading into last season. So who's a guy that in your mind you think that guy could potentially crack into the All-NBA team this year?
I would say Booker.
Okay, I strongly considered Booker for that Dame spot.
I think Devin Booker has a chance. I think I could also be talked into I had another one, Mike. Booker's the first name that came to mind. Oh, Bradley Beal could theoretically, you know, if he has a great season and the Wizards seem to have a better season. Oh, Steph just got beer all over him. This is great. Anyways, I can't believe they're letting fans sit courtside, by the way, Mike. No masks. Courtside, that's kind of surprised me. In L.A. of all places?
I don't know, man.
That's kind of crazy to me, you know?
It's the way it is.
Anyway, so, I think Bradley Beal and Booker would be my two.
My two are Donovan Mitchell and Michael Porter Jr. I think Michael Porter Jr., look, I've been kind of lukewarm on him, but I do think that with a full season without Jamal Murray and based on what this guy did down the stretch last year, and if you dive into his shooting numbers, he's shooting like 44% from three in his career, and he's also a really good rebounder. I could easily see a world where Michael Porter Jr. averages 25 a game this year. And if he does that, he's going to get some consideration for all NBA. And Donovan Mitchell, I expect Utah, just like we talked about last week, I expect them to be at or near the top of the Western Conference in the regular season. And I think Mitchell is probably going to put up big numbers, and he's a guy who could potentially crack one of these spots. The other guy I thought about was Ja Morant. A lot of people thought he was going to take a leap last year, and He really didn't. He was good, but he didn't go from averaging 17 a game to averaging 24 a game. He didn't go from 7 assists to 11 assists. He just sort of maintained, and then, of course, he had the really good playoff series. But is he a guy who could take that next step and become a consistent, he's putting up 20-plus a night and double-figure assists? I could see that, too. So those would be my three, Mitchell, Porter Jr., and Ja Morant, that I could see potentially cracking this list. But I think we got the right 11 guys.
Yep. I think we did too, Mike. I really do. All right. So I guess we're going to take our discussion to who's the MVP of those 11 guys. Like, who's going to win the MVP? And I think I've made it very abundantly clear who I think is going to be MVP in previous podcasts, Mike. Right? I think I've made it clear.
I think so.
Kevin Durant, I think, is the MVP this season. I that's who I'm going with. I wouldn't be overly surprised if Giannis wins it, but I think Durant is the MVP. I think he's going to put up ridiculous numbers, especially with Kyrie being out. I think he's going to have to put up ridiculous numbers. Whereas I think Giannis has more complete team around him. And if they're close in win totals, and then they're going to look at stats. And I'm just going to say I think Durant's going to win it, Mike.
I think there's interesting stories with a bunch of guys, right? Durant has an interesting story in that he's probably one of the top 15 players of all time at this point, and he only has one MVP. And if Kyrie, especially if he ends up missing all or most of this season, and Brooklyn has the type of season that people expect them to, as you said, Durant's going to probably put up huge numbers in the course of Brooklyn making their way to the first or second seed in the East. And so I think Durant has there's a compelling reason for people to vote for Durant for MVP. And that is an all-time great player who only has one MVP award on his resume. He's having a terrific year. He deserves the MVP. That's the narrative there. I think Giannis's narrative is two-time former MVP, had a great year last year in the regular season, maybe just a slight tick below his other two NBA MVP seasons, but still, he was phenomenal, and he wasn't really even being considered. And why wasn't he being considered? Because of the playoff failures the previous two seasons against Toronto and then in the bubble against Miami. Now, he goes ahead and wins the championship, puts up 50 in the deciding game, comes back. I'm guessing he's going to be as good or better than he's been in any of the last previous three seasons. So it's sort of the Giannis MVP coronation tour, where this year's finals MVP or this year's regular season MVP puts a cap on what's been a remarkable turnaround for a guy who people started to think that maybe he couldn't get it done on the biggest stage, even though he had already won two MVPs. So I think that's the Giannis story. Luka is the Vegas favorite to win the MVP. Case for Luka is probably statistically the best under age 22 player in the history of the league, with all due respect to LeBron. What Luka's done is probably even more incredible statistically than what LeBron was able to accomplish here with the Cavs in Cleveland. And if Luka can carry that roster that Dallas has, which is probably inferior to most of the teams that are going to be at the top of the East and Western Conference, if Luka can somehow carry the Mavericks to a top four seed and then get the right breaks and do something in the playoffs, although obviously the playoffs aren't going to impact the MVP race. But I think Luka has a compelling story as a guy who is the next star in the league. To me, those three are the most likely. Could LeBron get into the discussion? Sure. But I don't see – LeBron would have to – I just don't think statistically he's going to be able to keep up with any of those three guys. As good as he might be, And even if LA, he leads them to the best record, I just don't think statistically when you put his stats next to those three guys that we mentioned earlier, I just don't see that happening.
Unless he shoots like 70% from the field, and which he's not going to do, but I mean, he'd have to do something ridiculous, right?
There would have to be some aspect of what he does that would be just insane. AD goes down for 30 games and LeBron carries them and keeps them at the top of the Western Conference, then maybe, but I don't see it. Obviously, there's a storyline with LeBron that if he can get himself into the discussion, that nobody his age or after his many seasons has ever been remotely close to producing at that MVP level. So if he could do that, maybe there'd be some groundswell for him to win it just for sentimental reasons, if no other. But I just don't think statistically he's going to be able to keep up with those other guys.
I just want to throw this out there, Mike. If the Golden State Warriors are going to rely on Andre Iguodala to jack up three-pointers, they're probably not going to be successful at this game, at playing. Like, he's shot way too many shots for my liking for Golden State Warriors, Mike. Just putting it out there for you. And I thought they were stopping with this nonsense. Are you watching the game, Mike?
I mean, I'm watching it out of the corner of my eye.
Look, I thought they were stopping with this leaning in flopping crap. Like, that's part of the, they just called a foul that clearly wasn't, it was not supposed to be called based on.
Those refs didn't get the memo, man.
God, that's annoying. I hope that, I thought they were going to snuff that out. I was really excited. I guess Simmons, I don't know if you listened to the Simmons House and Russillo podcast where they did the over-unders. Did you listen to that?
I did, yeah.
They said over under 20 games before you're upset about one of the flopping calls. I guess it was game two. I guess we the under hits. Anyways.
Giannis is my pick. I think just looking at him today in tonight's game, and I'm just struck by just how big he is, how fast he is, how physically overpowering he is. I know one time Durant was trying to guard him, and Giannis just kind of backed him in.
You almost said LeBron there. I almost did say LeBron.
I'm used to saying somebody's going to overpower somebody. That's usually LeBron. But Giannis just looks like he's playing a different game than other guys. I think Milwaukee's going to have a great regular season. And I think, like I said, I think the coronation of, hey, this guy won two previous MVPs, we kind of discounted him. We started to knock him down a peg, and he came roaring back with a 50-point game and a clincher in the NBA Finals. And now he's going to put up – I mean, he's going to put up another 30, 13, and 5. I don't know. I see Giannis as the guy who's going to get it this year.
Fair enough. All right. Now we're going to move to Eastern Conference and Western Conference champions.
What are you eating, man?
I'm not eating anything. I've got my cough, man.
Choking on your microphone over there?
Yeah, I'm coughing. I'm coughing, all Mike. Right. I've got my all cough. Right. It's past midnight. It's where it gets bad. I apologize.
I thought you were having a donut.
No, I'm not having any donuts or anything. I've got my cough, right, man. It's past midnight. We went past our time here. All right. Eastern Conference champions, Mike, I'm going to surprise you.
Who's your finalist?
Oh, I just have my champions.
Bucks Nets? I mean, it has to be Bucks Nets.
Probably, right? Bucks Nets, but I'm taking the Bucks, Mike, because there's just too much uncertainty with the Nets. I want to take the Nets. I think if Kyrie is there, I'd probably take the Nets, but I'm taking the Bucks, Mike.
I'm taking the Bucks. I'm Bucks over Nets in the Eastern Conference Finals.
All right. And in the Western Conference, oh, man, who are they playing? I'm going to take the Lakers over the Suns in the Western Conference Finals.
Nuggets over Mavericks. I'm redoing my NBA Finals pick from last year where I had Bucks Nuggets. And I'm going to stick with Bucks Nuggets. So Nuggets over Mavs for me. I don't believe in this Lakers team. I don't know what it is. too many old guys. I think LeBron and AD at this point, I'm just not convinced that both of them are going to be healthy and at their peak come playoff time. I don't think Russ is going to – I don't think that experiment is going to work. I'm just not convinced that these other pieces, parts that the Lakers have thrown together around LeBron and AD are enough. I think Jamal Murray comes back at some point towards the end of the regular season. Is he 50 points per game, Jamal Murray? I doubt it, but that team's going to have had a whole season to play together. I know I mentioned it earlier that Michael Porter Jr. could take a leap. I expect him to have a big year, although he's not vaccinated, so maybe he's going to miss. He might miss a whole bunch of time with COVID, but I don't know. I think Denver, to me, Jokic, Porter, I think they have enough. All these teams in the West, again, are goofy. I think the Suns have a decent chance to get there and repeat. I'd be worried about Chris Paul's health. I think the Mavericks, if things broke right, Luka is going to have a tremendous, tremendous season. And I think the rest of their roster is maybe a little underrated. And if Porzingis can stay healthy, which I know is a huge if, it probably only has a 10% chance. But if Porzingis could stay healthy, I think Dallas has a puncher's chance to make it to the NBA Finals. But I'm going to go Bucks, Nuggets, and you want me to go ahead and give my champ?
Sure, go ahead.
Bucks.
All right. Well, I have Bucks, Lakers. And this is, I'm going to say it again, Mike. I think I picked Bucks, Lakers last year, right? I feel like I picked
Bucks. You might have. At the beginning of the season, you might have.
I said we were deprived of LeBron versus Jordan in the finals. We got to get Giannis versus LeBron in the finals. We got to have it. That would be a great storyline, you know, regardless of who wins the series.
It seems crazy. This is a testament to LeBron, right? That Kobe and Giannis are from completely different eras, and you're lamenting the fact that we missed out on Kobe versus LeBron, but you're excited that we might get Giannis versus LeBron, two guys from two completely different eras that you're still hoping that LeBron could match up with each of those guys.
And yeah.
It's a testament to
yeah, I said Michael LeBron's Jordan, didn't I? I totally was saying
no,
Michael
you didn't.
Jordan. Oh, okay,
no,
good.
You didn't.
Good.
No, I don't think you said Michael Jordan.
Well,
if I did say
Michael Jordan, it was supposed to be Kobe. I mean,
we should
2009 we should have had Kobe versus LeBron in 2009, Mike. And that haunts me to this day.
Like, yeah, I agree with you. That would have been great to see for sure.
So anyway, I'm thinking that's going to happen this year. I think we're going to get Giannis, we're going to get LeBron, and you know I can't pick against LeBron. I'm going to take the Lakers, Mike.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to take the Lakers.
I can't believe that.
I'm taking the Lakers.
I can't believe.
I like this. I like this, the look of them losing to the Warriors right now. But I think they're going to figure it out. I have faith in LeBron. I have faith in Dwight Howard. I have faith. I think they'll make it work. It'll all work out. And you can laugh at me. You can laugh at me come April, May, June, when the Lakers get knocked out, Mike. But that's where I'm going right now. You know, we'll have to do this like a month into the season. We'll reevaluate our picks, whether we want to.
I'm saving. I wrote all my stuff down this year.
I wrote it down too, Mike. I've got it all right here.
And I'm putting it in a little notebook so that I have it so that we can refer to it instead of just blindly guessing about what we think we said. This way we can actually have written down.
Have intelligent conversation about what
we can at least actually document what it is that we truly said instead of just guessing, saying, I think I said this and I think I said that. I don't agree with your Lakers pick, but I think that the West is pretty wide open, like we described last week. I mean, I said there were four teams. And is there what a universe were...
that you think they could be in the finals, Mike?
Oh, yeah, for sure. If AD's healthy, if LeBron's healthy, then I think they have a really good chance. I don't believe in their other guys, like I said, but you don't need much from your other guys if LeBron and AD are at their best. And then you look at the other teams. Like I said, there were four teams I thought could get to the NBA Finals out of the West. I said I thought the Mavs, the Suns, and the Nuggets, plus the Lakers, were the four teams that could get to the NBA Finals out of the West. And Dallas, look, if everything goes right and Porzingis is healthy and Luka is amazing, could they do it? Sure, but their roster is not that good. You look at Denver, if they had Jamal Murray, I think they might be the favorite. But who knows, when Murray comes back in March from his ACL, what's he going to be like? He's probably not going to be 50-point-a-game Jamal Murray, like I said earlier. So they have to figure out what that looks like. Phoenix has everybody back, but now you have the DeAndre Ayton situation, which we didn't really talk about, but didn't get signed to an extension. So what does that look like? By the way, that's never worked out for anybody. When yeah. you end up not offering your guy a max contract, you can be pretty sure that DeAndre Ayton is going to do whatever he can to get out of Phoenix at the end of his rookie deal. So he's going to, whether they let him go to restricted free agency or they offer him the qualifying offer next year, whatever it ends up being, you think about Kevin Love, Gordon Hayward, two guys that both were, I know Gordon Hayward signed the, when Utah didn't give him the full max, and then he was going to sign here in Cleveland. And then he ended up going back. I think Utah matched it, but he was never happy. And it seemed like he was on his way out. And then Kevin Love was unhappy when the Timberwolves didn't offer him the 5-year max. And I think it's going to be the same thing with Ayton. I think you send a message to your player. Look, I don't know if I'd be excited. I'm not saying it's the wrong decision for Phoenix, because I don't know if I'd be excited to pay DeAndre Ayton all that money. But when you look at their chances to make the finals, how does DeAndre Ayton react to that? And what does Chris Paul? So I guess my point to you is, yes, the Lakers have a legitimate chance to make it to the finals because, as I said over and over again last year, I just don't know. I don't really trust any of those teams. I don't think either of those any of those teams in the West are as good as Brooklyn or Milwaukee.
Yep, I agree. Listen, we'll see what happens. I think the Lakers have a chance, Mike, and that's why I'm picking them. All right, we're going to do 1 minute on this, Mike. Should Baker Mayfield even consider playing on Thursday? The answer is no. Okay. Nick Chubb's not playing. Kareem Hunt's not playing. Who knows if Landry's playing. There's no reason to put Baker out there on Thursday night. Give him the week off. Put Case Keenum out there. Even though
is that thing going to heal, though? Does a partially torn labrum heal from one week to the next?
You give him 11 days off then, though. That's the way I'm the, you
right, essentially but does give, it heal?
I don't know, Mike, but it's better than putting him out there and getting, like, give him 11 days and see what happens, as opposed to, like,
at some point, though, aren't you throwing away your season?
No, you're already, but I'm saying, Mike, the reason I say don't put him out there is you've already got two of your starting running backs out. You sit him this game.
When does it start being a must-win game, though?
Oh, it's not time yet. It's a 17-game season this year. It's different. It's not must-win. It is not must-win.
You're in last place in your division.
We're tied for last place. We're actually ahead of Pittsburgh, but with tiebreakers, and they don't play this week. So if they lose, then they will be in last place in their division. I agree. Listen, I'm not worried about Pittsburgh, and I'm not worried about Cincinnati. We're better than them. If you look at who Cincinnati's played, they've played.
Are we better than them without Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt?
No, but that's why I'm saying don't play Baker out there to get him even more hurt. Sit him out this game. Chubb's going to be back next week. Stefanski says all signs point that he'll be playing next week. Chubb's not going to be. Chubb will. Listen. There is no chance that Chubb is not playing against the Steelers on Halloween. There's zero chance. There's a reason he's sitting You know, they would have put him on IR if they thought he was going to be out for three games. He's only going to be out two. So Chubb is definitely going to play against the Steelers. I'm just saying, here's my opinion, Mike. You've already got your two running backs out. You punt this game. You rest Baker. You put Case Keenum out, even though he looked like an old grandpa when he was out there for the last possession. And throwing the ball, I'm pretty sure you and I could go out there and throw the ball like
Case Keenum. Maybe the Browns are looking for a reason not to extend Baker.
Well, I mean, that's an idea, and one of my friends threw out there is, and that's why Baker will fight to play, because he's afraid he's going to lose his job or not get paid in the offseason. But I listen, I'm just telling you, if I'm the Browns, I talk to him and be like, listen, dude, you got to sit out this game so that we can, like, just get you.
I think the thing for me is, look, he's obviously a tough guy. The fact that when he went down, I was like, that's a separated shoulder right there. I mean, I really thought my initial take was he's done. I'm like, there's no way he's going to play.
I'm sure you saw my Facebook post, or Twitter. I said all the people have been asking for Baker Baker to be gone are going to enjoy the next month of no Browns, because I thought he was done. My sister actually tore her labrum junior year of high school. And as soon as that happened, she sends me a text. I'm having terrible flashbacks to high school. My labrum's torn again. Oh, no. She thought for sure that he was done.
I think the thing is that they're a really good season. The longer this goes, it becomes more precarious. They're very close to taking what was a very promising season, and mostly due to injury. Look, I mean, we're missing the two best running backs. We're missing two guys off the offensive line. The defense was banged up completely against the Chargers.
We're missing our most reliable wide receivers out, because, like, Odell can't catch a damn bass football. I mean, my God, that fourth down catch that he didn't make.
You just got to let it. I would trade him for a fifth round pick at this point.
There's no way they're going to do that.
But what does he do? What does he do?
Mike, I'm not disagreeing with you.
He doesn't do anything. He doesn't make great catches. He doesn't get open. He doesn't make simple catches. I don't know what he does. So I'd be more than happy to see him go.
Well, listen, I'm going to see him in person on Thursday night, Mike.
Well, good luck. You enjoy that. I'm sure that it's going to go really well. Hopefully they can win, regardless of whether they trot out Case Keenum or the injured Baker Mayfield. Hopefully the Browns can get a win. But I think the season is teetering on the brink at this point, especially because it looks like the division, the Ravens, are way better than anybody thought. The Bengals, you can say what you want, but they're better. They're not going to be a complete cakewalk, I wouldn't think, in the two games that we're going to play them. Pittsburgh stinks, but it's still Pittsburgh and Cleveland. So, you know, those games are going to be difficult, hey, I would have to guess.
Speaking of difficult and ridiculous, so the Astros-Red Sox game was tied 2-2 in the ninth, Mike. Okay. The over-under for the Astros-Red Sox game was 10. Bad beat of the day. You ready for this? Two outs in the ninth inning. It's still 2-2. In the top of the ninth, the Red Sox proceed to give up 7 runs in the top of the ninth with 2 outs. The over hits after it being 2. So the final score at 9-2. Bad beat of the day.
2-2 in that series, right?
Yeah, 2-2 in that series now. And then LA ended up winning, right, today, I think, finally? So
I think so, yeah.
2-1. It didn't look good for LA early, but they ended up coming back. So playoff baseball, it's enjoyable. I don't have any stakes in the game. I kind of am rooting for Boston because that's where Molly's family is rooting for. So I don't like Houston. So I'm happy if any of the teams other than Houston wins the championship. So what that probably means is that Houston will win the championship. So I don't know if you have a stake or you have a team you're rooting for, Mike.
I could care less.
You just watched playoff baseball, right?
I watched the Yankees Red Sox game.
Well, yeah.
And I'll flip to baseball a little bit. I do like playoff baseball more than anything, but to be honest with you, every year I drift further and further away from Major League Baseball because I just don't know. I don't know the players anymore. I'm just not following the game. I'm not as invested in it. So it doesn't mean as much to me when you watch games and you're like, I don't even know who these guys are. So
they're the, they're the Guardians. That's what they are.
There they are. All right. So let's wrap it up there. Want to say thanks to everyone for checking out this NBA episode tonight. If you haven't had a chance, we had a great interview with Ohio State Buckeyes head coach Chris Holtmann that went up on Sunday night. So if you hadn't had a chance to check that one out, please make sure you do so. And then coming up on Friday, we have Peter Lonergan, who is the director of high performance coach development for Australia. And he had a lot of great things to share with us about coaching and his philosophy and the way that they do things in Australia and how coaches here in the U.S. and everywhere else can benefit from some of the things that he's learned and that he teaches over there with Basketball Australia. So please check those two episodes out and make sure you follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Hoopheads Pod, and please subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And thanks for sticking with us tonight, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.